You want to make your fantasy sports league more than a fantasy? Then you need Trophy Smack.
It's the number one store for fantasy and tournament trophies, belts, draft boards, loser awards, and other ridiculous products.
Trophy Smack is more than just a trophy company with outstanding customer service and products. It's the very essence and heart of every fantasy league. And if you click now, TrophySmack.com gives you free shipping, a free loser poster, and can have the hardware to you in a few days, bragging rights included. Go to TrophySmack.com right now and take your fantasy league to the next level.
Go. It's about to be a jovial 60 minutes, my dude. And you hear right now, what you gonna hear right now?
Name change.
Of all the places, and you hear right now, what you gonna hear right now?
Name change.
Of all the places. Been with the dynasty, but does she like me? Feel like a plumber sleeping, now that's a pipe dream. For the right fee, I might be entitled to the title. Be on top like the cherry of an ice cream. Sundays, that's the one day I can complain, never complain. Cause I know the boys gon' drop a pod, prop up my squad so I can talk a lot. But here we go again, it's a new year. Rookies flowing in, it's some new tears. Who here to do fear? Bounce bells off of their chest like boutonnieres. It's a new era. Happy hour, yeah. Let me ask you this, are you trying to get picks? Are you trying to get rich? Are you trying to get ships? Then you're trying to get this. And you hear right now, what you gonna hear right now?
Name change.
Of all the places. And you hear right now, what you gonna hear right now?
Name change.
Of all the places.
We're live. What's going on, guys? Welcome on into Chasing Points. This is where we recap. We talk about what happened today. You know, who messed up, who did great. You know, what we're looking forward to next week, of course. And I'm joined by, of course, Taylor Cornell over there. What's going on, Taylor?
Hey, I'm celebrating my Bengals' first win of the season. So that's two consecutive weeks we haven't lost. So call it what you want.
Two consecutive weeks you have not lost. I like that.
But don't
I like
call
that
it a
lot.
Comeback, baby, because Burrow is wheeling and dealing.
Dude, he looks good, man. He looks great inside the pocket. His feet, you know, are phenomenal. I honestly think like it's reminiscent of Tom Brady and his pocket awareness, and Drew Brees and his pocket awareness. But he's way more athletic than both those guys. He's way more athletic, right?
Yeah, he's ridiculously agile in the pocket, avoiding rushes and stepping up and keeping his eyes downfield. So I'm impressed with him. Of course, that's not to overshadow the Mixon day.
Oh my God, man. Mixon went off, didn't he? And the worst part was, I got to bet for a second. The worst part was about Mixon was I got so nervous about the whole, you know, rib injury because of what happened with Tyrod Taylor and rib injuries as a whole, you know, tend to kind of limit players. I got so nervous, I took out my Cincinnati Bengals Joe Mixon stack for my DFS, and I forgot to put it back in because I was so busy this morning prepping for the week with all these injury updates. You know, there were so many just to, you know, looking into week four. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these guys actually played, which was different from week two, where we had a bunch of questionable tags, and those guys did not play. So, you know, with that being said, was there any performance that really stood out to you? You know, mine has to be the Dak Prescott, you know, and the Browns as a whole, right?
I mean, I think the takeaway there is just how bad the Dallas defense is, and that no matter who they're playing, I think the opponent's going to put up some really good fantasy numbers, even though Baker, of course, didn't put up great fantasy numbers. But as a whole, that offense was just clicking.
Well, I feel like this year is so much different than most other years. We always have good offenses with bad defenses, but I have never seen this like discrepancy of great, phenomenal offenses with absolutely insanely bad defenses like this amount. You know, normally there's one or two teams that we can look at, like the Chiefs back, you know, what, 3 years ago or so, you know, with Alex Smith there. But, I mean, let me just go through it. Let me look at this real quick. We have the Seahawks, right? Awesome offense, terrible defense. Dolphins, above average offense. They struggled a little bit, you know, this game, but they've actually been producing pretty high. I think they have, outside of this week, in weeks 2 and 3, they had 56 points combined. That's a good offense overall. You know, the Texans are another one. The Vikings are another one. The Lions are another one. I mean, Cowboys, like we already mentioned, there are just so many teams with great, great offenses and bad defenses. And, you know, fantasy players are reaping all the benefits, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, going back to that Dallas game, I'm wondering if the big winner from the weekend, you know, it's unfortunate because it's due to injury, but isn't Kareem Hunt, because now he just steps into a role where obviously Stefanski is wanting to, yeah, calm down, get a hold of yourself, Chase, we're live. Woo. Come on, man.
Sorry. Oh, man.
Hey, I've got Hunt a couple places. I got Hunt a couple places as my RB1, and I was loving the production I was getting out of him, even sharing with Chubb. And if Chubb is out, we don't know how long it'll be, but, you know, assuming he's, you know, missing some games, Hunt steps right into a role where he's going to be, I think, extremely productive. He had 2 touchdowns today, so they've got the Colts next week, the Steelers. I mean, depending on how long Chubb's out, they got the Bengals after that at the end of October. So, you know, not the easiest matchups the next couple weeks, but I don't think it necessarily matters, his matchups, because he's going to be so involved.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that Hunt is going to be, you know, just a major, major asset, regardless if you know, Chubb is in or out. They've shown that they give enough volume to the running backs. Mm-hmm. And you know, to that point, we saw an awesome game from Odell Beckham Jr. and Baker Mayfield pretty much just, you know, blanked the bed. I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss on this podcast or not, but he blanked the bed. You know, yeah. So Odell Beckham was the top receiver in the week with 38.4 fantasy points, I believe, at least in most PPR standard leagues. What are you going to do with Odell going forward?
I mean, I'm trying like heck to sell him in Dynasty on most of my teams that obviously are somewhat more on the rebuilding side of things. I think if you're even a contending team, though, it doesn't hurt to put some feelers out on what people might be willing to buy him for. He's now, I think, 2 out of the last 3 weeks with the Bengals game, and then this game has put up good numbers. The Bengals was 70 and a touchdown. This one's 150 total yards and a touchdown, 2 touchdowns.
It was actually 3 touchdowns. He had a rushing touchdown, too.
Oh, you're right. 3 touchdowns. My bad. He had the trifecta. Yeah. So, I mean, I think regardless of my team makeup, I'm exploring trading him away. But I mean, you can't hate this type of run he's on a little bit here, the 2 of the last 3 games. If you saw last year where we suffered through game after game where he's just disappointing. So, I mean, I'm still trying to sell, but I don't know. Are you back aboard like Odell Beckham elite status?
Well, I always had him higher than most people did. You know, I just think that the talent trumps all. Now, with Stefanski there and how much he likes to run, you know, it always made me nervous, but I had him up there. You know, for redraft leagues, I had him like, you know, right behind like DJ Moore, DJ Chark, those kind of guys. But he's still in that category for me in redraft. In Dynasty, if I'm trying to win now, I'm going to go out and buy him. It's tough to know which weeks to start him. And over this next 3 weeks, you actually won't be able to start him. He's got Indy, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati, which, you know, are all 3 shaky matchups. But then he has Las Vegas. Then he has Houston. Then he has Philly. Then he has Jacksonville. Then he has Tennessee. Baltimore's a little bit tougher matchup, but, you know, like you're probably about to mention here in a little bit, Terry McLaurin had a good matchup today up against Baltimore. But then he has the Giants and the Jets to finish out the season. You know, obviously, if you know, don't play week 17 with Pittsburgh, which most don't, you know, Jets are going to be the championship week. So Odell Beckham, dude, he's looking good to me. He's looking good. And although I'm concerned about his volume, that home stretch schedule looks sick.
Schedule's nice. You're right. But you hit on the main concern I have with him is with Stefanski, you're really relying on not volume or work. You're relying on efficiency. And while I think Beckham can be efficient, I don't trust Baker to be efficient enough. I mean, when you think about Beckham's touchdowns today, it was a pass from Jarvis Landry and an end around run. It wasn't Baker getting him the ball in an efficient manner necessarily. So that's my concern going forward, is whether Baker is going to be efficient enough to sustain good production from Beckham. But I think Baker's the problem, not Odell Beckham.
On the other end, Amari Cooper went off. I think it was a major result of the Cowboys being down. But he's had a really great season. He's actually exceeded my expectations this season. I'm always skeptical on 2 guys. One of them is Amari Cooper. The other one's Tyreek Hill. I don't like drafting either one of those guys early. And Amari Cooper especially has exceeded my expectations and did well up against one of the top cornerbacks in the league, Denzel Ward.
Well, I think you also, doubting him early on, couldn't have predicted that the defense was going to be this bad and they were going to be throwing for 500 yards a game.
Well, I did, but actually it was Gallup that I thought was going to be getting the work. I was dead wrong on that. Sorry, guys. All right, DJ Chark. You know, I didn't start him this week. I was a little bit concerned with the injury that he had going into it, but he crushed it, mm-hmm. right? Two touchdowns, 95 yards, 29.5 fantasy points in PPR. DJ Chark's an automatic play for me. I love DJ Chark. He's like one of my favorite up-and-coming receivers, especially in Dynasty. I went out and got him everywhere that I could last year. And even if I didn't get him last year, I still overpaid for him this year. He had an excellent game up against Cincinnati. Do you like DJ Chark? You a fan? You like him?
I didn't. I haven't. Now I kind of do. So I didn't last year. I wasn't quite sold on it. This year, he was kind of injured, I think, last game or whatever. So I wasn't, you know, quite on board with just a couple games of production this year. But I mean, actually seeing him play today again, he's obviously the top target on that team, although it was encouraging to see how much LaVisca was, you know, given some touches today too. But I mean, Chark showed just great body control and toe tapping on the touchdowns and things like that. So I was really impressed with him.
Yeah, I love it. By the way, you should change your Twitter handle to Matt Damon and just see what happens. Anyways, let's go ahead and go through a few of these games. You know, we named some of the standouts with Joe Mixon. Of course, Dalvin Cook had an excellent game as well, but I want to go through these actual games. So let's go ahead and check these out. We had the Washington football team up against the Ravens, and Lamar Jackson looked great. He got pulled in the fourth quarter, so RG3 could come in and throw an interception. You know, let's go ahead and go through your take on this, because I have a different take than what you do.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the most interesting takeaway I had from this game actually was I wasn't expecting that type of production from anyone on that offense for Washington against Baltimore, and to have Gibson kind of have his breakout game where he has almost 130 total yards, most of which was through the air, and then McLaurin still force-fed 14 targets. He was 10 for 118, and he even came into the game, I think, questionable. He popped up on the injury report late in the week with a thigh. So I was a little skeptical. I still started him. But I'm wondering if those guys are kind of showing that even though that offense is kind of a dumpster fire and Haskins probably isn't the quarterback of the future there, it might not matter. Like Gibson and McLaurin might be startable every single week, no matter the opponent. What are your thoughts?
So I'm actually going to go on the other side of this. I do like McLaurin. You know, I'm hoping Washington – you know, I always have a special place for them in my heart. They're my team. I don't support their organization. I don't support what the team does. So I'm done buying their merchandise. I'm done actually, you know, supporting the team itself. But for Washington's sake, as a fantasy football analyst, I hope that they get a quarterback, whether that's Justin Fields or whether that's Trevor Lawrence or any one of those quarterbacks to come in. I hated that Haskins draft pick. They needed help on the offensive line, and it's showing. However, they're still getting production out of their playmakers, and they went to their playmakers with Terry McLaurin and with Antonio Gibson. That's only two playmakers on the field. They don't have anybody else. You know, Steven Sims wasn't playing this game, but he's undersized. He's slow. He's unathletic, and he has small hands. He's not going to be a receiver that's going to last very long. Antonio Gandy-Golden, right? He's a, you know, work in progress. He's not... you know, he's not a polished receiver. Dontrell Inman is a journeyman. So, of course, they're going to go to Terry McLaurin. Of course, they're going to go to Antonio Gibbs, or at least I hope they do. Because, I mean, Scott Turner, he just doesn't get it. Like, it doesn't click with him. But what my take on this was this defense. This defense is going to be very, very good. Both Matt Ioannidis, who's out for the year, right? He wasn't playing. And then you have Chase Young, who's out for at least, you know, a week or two. He wasn't playing. And yet they still held Lamar Jackson to, like, what, under 200 passing yards, I think?
Yep, 193 and a pick.
And a pick with two touchdowns, by the way. So he did get the two touchdowns. Mm-hmm. But when you have that many, you know, opportunities and you have that much time in the pocket, it's going to happen. Meanwhile, he had one big run. But outside of that big run, like, what was that run, like 50 yards, I think?
Yeah, 50 of his 53 came on the touchdown run.
So he had six rushes for 3 yards. Like, that's how good and how fast this defense is. And yeah, they did have one blown coverage, and that kind of thing happens from time to time. But this defense is young. This defense is looking sexy. And moving forward, I'm scared to play teams up against this Washington football team's defense. So on to the next game. We have, oops, I'm a little bit behind, sorry. On to the next game, we have, let's talk about the Dolphins and Seahawks, which was very underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Tyler Lockett was probably the biggest disappointment there.
Dude, that was brutal. That was brutal. It was brutal. And I didn't see it coming. I mean, he did drop two balls.
Extremely unexpected, too. You wouldn't have thought that he was going to struggle this game. We had no indication that this might be a matchup you want to look out for Lockett. You just assumed he was going to keep cooking.
I thought this was going to be way higher scoring than it was. And honestly, the score is not indicative of the actual, you know, of what happened with the game. This game was what, 12 to 17 up until the tail end of the fourth quarter. And then they scored like a bunch of touchdowns at the tail end of the game. It was disappointing to say the least. Gesicki disappointed, right? Preston Williams disappointed. Miles Gaskin, I didn't think Miles Gaskin was going to go off, but if you started Miles Gaskin, you're disappointed. Seahawks actually, by the way, Seahawks are really, really, really good up against the running back. Not just the rushing running backs, but they're really good up against pass catching running backs. I mean, you saw what they did up against Miles Gaskin this week, but last week up against the Cowboys, they only allowed 19 yards on 7 receptions to Ezekiel Elliott. So moving forward, I'm not playing any running backs up against Seattle. Got a take on that?
No, sorry. There's audio coming through my headphones at the same time you're talking. So stupid ads on ESPN. No, no. I mean, when you take away Fitzpatrick's rushing today, their running backs were really like 16 for 60-ish or so. And again, how confident were you pumping Gaskin out there again? I'm not exactly sure anyways, but The fact that the Dolphins put up 23, which isn't, you know, extremely high scoring, but they weren't shut out, to put up 23 points and Preston Williams to disappoint, Gaskin disappoints, Gesicki disappoints, other than Devontae Parker.
Which I had going off, by the way. I had Devontae Parker going off too, but
there you go. I mean, are they close to going to Tua, or are you thinking they give it some more time?
Ryan Fitzpatrick looked okay. There were a lot of drop balls and whatnot, but I mean, as long as they're competitive, which they were in this game for the majority of the game, you know, they only lost by a touchdown and 2-point conversion. Mm-hmm. They're not pulling Fitzpatrick out. The team loves Fitz. So they're not moving on from him. I think week 12 is an opportunity for them to slot him in. It's sometime later in the season, but I think that they're going to stick with Fitz for most of the year. By the way, big shout out to Dave over there. Unfortunately, I can't highlight your comments, but yeah, love you, Dave. Thanks for tuning in. All right, on to our next game. I guess we got to speed this up because we're supposed to be only like 15 to 20 minutes, but good luck with that. All right, the Chargers. Oh my God, Justin Herbert looked amazing for the first part of the game. He kind of melted a little bit under pressure, but I mean, they lost Eckler, right? Which, have you seen any news on Eckler? Do you know what happened?
They said multiple weeks, hamstring, and he had his leg in a brace for his, like, supporting his hyperextended knee. So they're saying multiple weeks, not season. So we'll see. Don't know how long that might be.
Joshua Kelly's an absolute ad. What about Justin Jackson? Are you going to pick up Justin Jackson at all?
Somehow I actually already have Justin Jackson because I was banking on him being the Eckler backup more than Kelly earlier in the offseason. And so I kind of went all in on Justin Jackson in some places. And so I don't know that he's – I don't know. I mean, didn't Kelly have a fumble or two today? I thought he did.
He had his second fumble. He had at least one. Okay. But he did have his second fumble 2 weeks in a row, minimum. Yeah. So
I would be a little worried about that. But I don't know. I don't think Justin Jackson is necessarily as talented as Joshua Kelly. So, but again, you need opportunity and you assume he's going to jump into a 1A, 1B type of thing with Kelly. I don't think Kelly comes in and becomes a workhorse necessarily to you.
Well, I mean, he kind of already was to an extent. He had, what, 23 carries 2 weeks ago or a week ago? He was always that Melvin Gordon type player. Mm-hmm. And he was actually better than Melvin Gordon, in my opinion, at playing that role. I like Joshua Kelly a lot, but Justin Jackson is a big question mark. You know, how much fab are you going to throw at him? And I think he's worth, you know, a good little portion of it because he is a poor man's version of Austin Eckler. So if you have Austin Eckler, you know, I'm not saying go throw you know, 20% or 25%, but, you know, 10% towards Joshua Kelly for a few weeks if Austin Eckler does miss a significant amount of time. Kind of like it. Kind of like it. Now, Rojo was actually really successful this week, right?
Yeah, yeah. This was a great week for the Rojo fans.
But he dropped like three passes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I don't know. Does it matter, though? I mean, he dropped the passes, but he still got 26 touches. I mean, so he was given enough opportunities to even drop three. So I don't know. I mean, you would think what that was last week where they had the fumbled exchange between him and Brady, and then he kind of vanished from there, and you think he's in the doghouse. It's like he goes back out there this week and makes mistakes and still gets 26 touches. Now, granted, Fournette was out, so we'll wait and see how that plays out when he comes back. I think McCoy also got injured in this game, which you don't know how much he would have been factoring in, but I don't know. I never was super strong for or against Rojo, so I'm pretty lukewarm on him anyways, but you can't deny that opportunity, 26 touches in a game.
Well, the interesting part was Cam Akers came in later in the game on passing downs.
Keyshawn Vaughn.
Or Keyshawn, I'm sorry. Yeah Keyshawn Vaughn. I apologize. You're right. So Keyshawn Vaughn came in later in the game and actually got the passing down work after the three drops by Rojo. So if Fournette does return, it's a major concern for me. It's a major concern for me that even with McCoy going out, like Rojo could end up losing snaps next week if, you know, Fournette has more of the hot hand at the time. I'm a little bit concerned about Rojo, although he did produce. So if you're somebody that's a Rojo fan, I wouldn't recommend going out there and trying to overpay for him or anything like that after this performance. I'm not on Rojo as much as a lot of people are this week.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that you can look at this performance and say it's a precursor for success and this opportunity will be there all season long. I think, like you said, just as early as next week, you could see snap share go down, touches get shared a little bit more between Fournette if he's back, and if they start working Keyshawn Vaughn more. So, I don't know. This might be his high point of the season.
Dude, absolutely. So, is Justin Jefferson actually now a thing?
I mean, you say it like he wasn't already, you know, a thing.
He had 1 week. He had one good week. Now he has two good weeks. Two out of four. Is he a thing?
Two out of four. Yeah, I'll take it. I think so. I mean, I had him pretty actually, I guess I was technically low on him compared to a lot of people. But I still had him, I think, at like wide receiver 5 in this class coming into the season. My main concern was, again, he's going into a role where I thought he'd probably be outside more than he was used to in college, where he was almost exclusively the slot. So I had some questions about fit, and I was a little worried about Kirk Cousins having, you know, the arm to support two wide receivers like he did with Diggs and Thielen. But it kind of looks like Jefferson's slotting in nicely. I mean, he again is making the most of not a ton of looks. I mean, 5 targets, 4 catches, 100 yards. That's extremely efficient. But I mean, that's pretty encouraging for, and I think he came out after the game and said, "Hey, I haven't had a preseason. This is like my preseason. I'm just getting warmed up here." So, I mean, he's got the swag to go with it. So,
yeah, I like Justin Jefferson a lot. I did, you know, coming out of college, and like you said, it concerned me with his role, especially since he succeeded in the slot, and that's going to be the Rudolph and Irv Smith Jr., you know, area, but. Like, they're not playing that role. Like, they're not getting receptions. All of Kirk Cousins' targets are going to the wide receiver, which I think is kind of like a sign. Hey, what's up, coaches? I'm throwing the ball to the wide receivers. I'm not doing these stupid dump-offs. Like, you know, give me some more opportunities. So we'll see how that goes, you know, moving forward. I still want to see one more week of it before I feel comfortable starting him on a week-to-week basis. But I did like what I saw.
Yeah, I think he was kind of going into this because probably you're starting him if you have to because of injuries or, you know, concerns about the games getting postponed if you're sitting your KC New England guys or whatever. I think he's getting a little bit closer with two performances now where you're going to be starting him. You know, he's more flex worthy than he is an emergency start.
So is it Traquan Smith season yet?
No.
Traquan Smith, yeah. Baby! Crushing skulls out there. Oh my God, I love Traquan Smith. Like, I've loved him for a long time, but he got 2 touchdowns this week, and it was awesome. I loved every second of it. Meanwhile, you had Kenny Galladay going out there and performing. You had Hockenson, who, by the way, should have had another touchdown in addition to the one that he had. However, Matt Stafford underthrew him, and it was an interception. And then, of course, my boy, and of course, Tyler's boy over there, yeah. Dynasty Happy Hour, DeAndre Swift, getting the work in there. But what are they doing? Why are they playing Adrian Peterson so much outside of the red zone? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know. I mean, I would think most of the people that took Swift in rookie drafts were anticipating a potentially rough rookie season because you know Matt Patricia isn't going to hand him the keys to 20-plus touches a week. But I'm like, you just got to hope at this point that Patricia is out sooner rather than later, and they realize that Swift is the most talented back in that backfield by far.
No, I thought he was gonna like salt and pepper the shit, like push it real good. I swear, I thought that Swift.
Sing it for me.
Push it real good. I don't know if you could hear that or not, but anyways, I thought that Swift was gonna take it over.
Yeah,
I really did. Swift was an absolute, you know, monster over there, at Georgia, and he was my favorite rookie coming out up until the combine. And then I moved Jonathan Taylor slightly ahead of Swift, just slightly. And even after the draft, I still had Swift ahead of Clyde Edwards-Helaire up until they signed Adrian Peterson. And that got me a little bit concerned. After week one, definitely really concerned. But after week two, I saw that he was still getting touches. And weeks one through week three, mm-hmm. he was leading weeks one and two, he was leading that backfield in snaps. And then week three, he got 6 snaps. And that's when I was like, oh shit, what the hell happened? Oh, wait, I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss yet or not. Anyways, I like Swift a lot. And I think that he could be a huge performer for the Lions, who are most likely going to be trailing in a lot of games this season. I'm buying Swift everywhere that I can right now.
Sorry, oh, absolutely.
Mosquito. I had my door open. Anyways, so I'm buying Swift everywhere. I love Swift.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to be able to. And I talk about this sometimes. It's like, you're not always looking for buying low on players, because sometimes you're not going to be able to buy low. Sometimes you're just looking for a buy window at all to open up. And people that just took Swift at 103, 104, wherever in their drafts, weren't selling him in the offseason, weren't selling them after week one. But like, now you might be getting to an area where if his usage stays kind of low, that it opens just the slightest buying window at all. And you still might have to pay up, but it's going to pay off for you in the end.
Dude, I absolutely love that. I love that 100%. I think that Swift is that buy, you know, opportunity guy. Let me get that out of the way. That buy opportunity guy right now. I think he's an absolute smash play. And I love DeAndre Swift moving forward, especially for Dynasty. A lot of these, teams with all the injuries and stuff, they have hope. They think that they can win this year, although they had the second overall pick, third overall pick, fourth overall pick in rookie drafts. Mm-hmm. But they're like, oh my God, COVID's happening. I'm 3-1, you know, like I can win. So if you go out there and you offer somebody like, Will Fuller, for example, who went off this week, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit, for DeAndre Swift, dude, that's, I love that. Like, yeah. I would take that 100% of the time. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, it's just the excitement. It's the adrenaline. It's the impulse, you know, that will actually make that happen. All right. So we should probably go to rapid fire since we're at 25 minutes and Tyler said keep this like 15. all right. So let's see. We already talked about the Cowboys and Browns, the Jaguars and Bengals. We already covered that for the most part, right? Joe Mixon's fire, Joe Burrow. Kyler Murray was extremely disappointing. Meanwhile, Teddy Bridgewater was extremely impressive. And I think Teddy Bridgewater is now the running quarterback to own between the two.
Hey, he looked like it.
He did, man. He taught Kyler Murray how to run. Now, Kyler was really hesitant this week. I was really disappointed with his downfield opportunity. I was really disappointed with his, his decision-making. He had Andy Isabella open multiple times and let me down.
I'm sure you saw that.
Yeah, he did. Overall, Kyler Murray was just disappointed. And the biggest part that was disappointing was the play calling. So with Kenyon Drake, he let a lot of people down this week. It was weird because Kenyon Drake needs to get a little bit further downfield. When they call these shallow routes for Kenyon Drake, he's not a big guy, right? And neither is Kyler Murray. So you have a guy that's running, you know, 2-3 yards downfield as a release valve. Meanwhile, Kyler Murray has wheels. And with the passing lanes that get opened up by the offensive line, it's blocking his release valve from getting targets. So by putting him close to the line of scrimmage and passing down situations, it's almost counterproductive because Kyler Murray can actually gain those yards with his legs by himself. I don't really understand what Cliff Kingsbury is doing over there with the running back situation. However, I don't like, I just can't get behind Kenyon Drake.
There was a lot of disappointment out of this game from Arizona. I mean, the 4.3 yards per attempt for Kyler Murray is disgusting. He saved it with 3 touchdowns and 6 or 78 yards rushing. But I mean, That's just yucky. And I know Hopkins was, Hopkins was a little hobbled. You can bleep that out if you need to. Hopkins was a little hobbled, but I mean, 7 for 41 was unimpressive. Drake obviously has got his fantasy managers a little worried. I don't know if it's Chase Edmonds season yet, but there's some whispers. He might be getting some more opportunity, so we'll see.
It's Cena Benjamin season, just saying.
Oh, is it?
Well, all right, so Chase Edmonds can't stay healthy. He can't. It's not promising for Chase Edmonds to finish the season. Even in college, I don't think he finished a fully healthy season. I might be wrong with that, but I'm pretty sure he didn't have a full healthy season in college. Meanwhile, you saw him play 2 games last year, and he got hurt in both games, I'm pretty sure, at least banged up. I like Chase Edmonds a lot. I think he's very, very talented. I think that he could be a starting running back if he could stay healthy. But all three of these running backs have very, very similar profiles. And the only one that's been able to be consistent, you know, throughout college and the pros, well, obviously not the pros because, you know, Benjamin hasn't had a chance, but throughout college was Eno Benjamin.
I was going to say, Eno put up a pretty consistent bagel today.
Yeah, he's been consistent in the pros by putting up zeros. Over to DJ Moore. Another disappointing performance, but Patrick Peterson, you know, is relatively good. I mean, he allowed some yards over there to Terry McLaurin, but he's pretty overall solid. And the Cardinals, dude, they're looking better on defense. They're slightly improving. You know, what's your take on DJ Moore? Do you think that was just a flash in the pan? Do you think that this rough start this season?
He's been kind of rough for now a quarter of the season. I mean, people have to start thinking that we are not only a quarter of the way through the NFL season, we are about a third of the way through the fantasy regular season. Usually like 12 weeks or so is your regular season. So we've got, while it's still small sample sizes, it's still meaningful for the course of your season. If he does 4 more games like this, now you're really in trouble potentially. I did just trade for him in Dynasty this week because I really wanted some DJ Moore in my life. I think better days are ahead, but I'll be honest, I did not expect Robbie Anderson to be as involved in the offense as he has been so far. I traded him, I think, after week 1 for a future second and thought I was running away robbing the guy. And now I am questioning that one just a little bit. I'd probably still do it. But I don't know. Robbie Anderson looks like another one of those guys that's going to thrive away from Gase. And if he is going to be as productive as he has been or somewhere near there, that's obviously going to cut into DJ Moore. But I don't know. You look at those first few years of DJ Moore's career and he's producing at age 21, age 22, like, he's so young. I don't think he's all of a sudden lost anything. So I think he'll be fine in the long run. But if he's your wide receiver 1 right now, you're probably struggling a little bit putting him out there each week.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's tough. And I'm going to go through the route tree this week. And it's going to be featured on my Tuesday show for Dynasty Happy Hour. I'm sorry, for Fantasy Intervention. But looking over the first couple weeks, it was like the polar opposite. Like DJ Moore was running the routes that Robbie Anderson, or at least I thought Robbie Anderson was going to run. Meanwhile, Robbie Anderson is running the DJ Moore routes. So I don't know if they're doing that to kind of mess with defenses up until they switch. And I think he could be in line for a big time finish to the season. So I think you can kind of buy him cheap. But it does make me a little bit nervous. So
yeah.
I just had to cover that one. I had to get that one out. All right, the lowest scoring game, or second lowest scoring game of the weekend, was the Giants with 9 points and the Rams with 17 points. What's going on over there? Like, Darrell Henderson didn't get the workload. It was split up. What happened? Like, I don't get it.
I don't know. I have no idea. It was funny because I had the game on, was kind of watching on and off. I can't say it really had a lot of my attention, to be honest. I did look up and see the Cooper Kupp touchdown, which I had him on a team and was super excited about that. But even that was, I don't know if it was really a blown coverage, but it was down the middle of the field, and then he just outran some guys that took some bad angles. So it looks like a better day offensively for him. Made Goff's numbers look okay, 200 yards and a touchdown, but that offense was sluggish today. I was expecting 9 points or something like that out of New York, but the Rams, after being so explosive and efficient for 3 games of the season, to come out against a crap team in New York and put up that was not what I was expecting.
Yeah, that was crazy to me. I thought Darrell Henderson was absolutely going to go off. He did great in the passing game to start the game. He had 1 reception for like 16 yards. Mm-hmm. So like, yep. That was it. I just don't I don't get what happened in this game. It just doesn't make sense. It's like the Twilight Zone for me.
Yeah, right. It could just be one of those games you look back on in a couple weeks and, you know, the Rams hit the gas again and it was just a weird week. I don't know.
At least the Rams defense crushed.
Yeah.
All right. On to the Bills and the Raiders. This game just finished out. Obviously, people said don't play Diggs, but I said play Diggs, and Diggs worked out. Meanwhile, the Raiders struggled big time without their weapons. Nelson Agholor is a good receiver, man. He is good. He has bad hands, but he's a good overall receiver when it comes to getting open. I'll never forget the game that he had up against, with the Eagles, when he had, you know, 13 targets. He had 10 receptions for like 100 something odd yards. Like, I think it was 174 or something. Anyways, he had three drops. Those three receptions that he did not have were open drops that he could have taken to the end zone. And Nelson Agholor could actually be a play for me moving on. I know that's weird to say. That felt gross in my mouth, coming out of my mouth.
Okay, are you saying a DFS play, a plug into your flex like, play? I mean, are you talking just as long as Edwards and Ruggs are out, or do you think he's...
No. Just as long as Ruggs and Edwards are out, like he's worth way more on pickup, right?
Yeah, I guess. Zay Jones out-targeted him, but...
He did, but I like them both coming out of college. I like Zay Jones more, and I like Agholor, by the way. But Gruden just has this thing with vintage players, and they're vintage by now. So, all right, that's enough about that game. Unless you have anything to add.
No, I think Josh Allen is...
He's a god. He's a god.
I'm interested to see where he'll be in the MVP conversation in like four more weeks if he can sustain this type of play.
People hated me because I said I had him back-to-back ranking-wise with Russell Wilson. Oh, and, you know, dude, he's what, 24, I think? He's 7 years younger. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's 24. He might be 25. But, dude, he's 7 years younger and going into his prime. And he has rushing ability.
And like, a new, like, actual wide receiver one. So
yeah. Like, I was sitting there in the preseason touting the shit out of him. And people were like, oh, you don't know football. You don't know football if you like Josh Allen. I'm like, no, like, I might not know football, but I know fantasy football. And, you know, I see this guy progressing tremendously with wide receiver one. When John Brown is your wide receiver one and Cole Beasley is your wide receiver two, you've got problems.
Cole Beasley.
All right, on to the Colts game with the Bears. What the hell is going on with the running back situation over there? They're taking out, you know, Jonathan Taylor every other play, and it's pissing me off. It's pissing me off. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense at all.
I don't know. I don't understand why these coaches seem so incompetent when you think about Mixon and him not like him coming off the field when he's their most one of their most talented offensive players. You've got Jonathan Taylor, who is probably he's going to be the most talented player on that team, except for maybe Mo Alley Cox. He's coming off the field. It's like, what are you doing? I mean, you just sunk draft capital into this guy, so you obviously want him on your team. And I don't know, it just doesn't make sense.
Dude, just kill me now. Like, that's how I feel every time I watch Frank Wright pull him out of the game. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Like why are they just over, you know, thinking the situation and trying to confuse the defense? Meanwhile, they don't have to. They're up 19-3. Just leave Jonathan Taylor in the game and let him learn how to find holes. Mm-hmm. Let him progress as a player. You know, let him get better. I'm not saying give him 30 carries a game, but just let him get better. We all know Danny Trevathan is terrible, terrible at covering the running back out of the backfield. Meanwhile, he keeps on getting asked to do this. We saw it in the final play of the game. Well, we saw it throughout the game up against the Lions, but the final play of the game was highlighted when DeAndre Swift shook him completely. Meanwhile, we saw it consistently this week as to where Danny Trevathan, ended up messing things up, and they just did not give Jonathan Taylor a chance. I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's weird that when they – was that – gosh, it seems like forever ago, but that was week one where he got all those targets and we were like, oh, where'd this come from? And he showed out with those targets and now he's getting one target in the passing game. It's like, dude, stop trying to get Trey Burton the ball and just get the ball to Jonathan Taylor and let him make plays.
It just doesn't make sense to me. It's driving me nuts. All right, last thing for tonight's game. I know we're way over. How much do you like Manny Sanders? I'm sorry. How much do you like Sanders?
Dude, my mind was like really quick being like, Manny Sanders. Like, yeah. I love him. I think he's going to have a great game, honestly. I know the concern is he's the only offense, or really the only offensive weapon there. So, you know, are they really going to key in on him? And they just lost Peters, I think.
They did, yes.
So they've lost like another offensive lineman. So I get the concern that you can think that they're really just going to focus on him, but I just think that means he's even more involved. I think he's going to get 25 touches tonight. And I like, again, I know I was talking about the Bengals, but I watched him last week against the Bengals, and he's so freaking good. Like, he's so good. And when they put in Boston Scott and they run the ball with Boston Scott or Corey Clement, you can tell without even looking at the numbers that that player is less talented. And I'm like, that's not Miles Sanders. Like, just get Miles Sanders the ball, get him the ball in space, and keep going to him, because they went away from him last week, even though it was working. And then that's when Carson Wentz kind of went into a rut. The offense sputtered a little bit, and that's how you end up tying a team that you shouldn't have been tied with. So I think they're going to get him the ball. I also think San Francisco is better, so they probably will be playing a little bit more catch-up than they were last week against Cincinnati. So I hope that bodes well for him in the passing game.
I just hope they watch game film, because the only way that you're going to end up taking home a trophy, right, from TrophySmack.com, which, by the way, TrophySmack.com, it's one of our sponsors. The only way you're going to do that is by playing Sanders this week. It's a smash play. Sanders is huge, huge, huge for us. I just see him completely dominating this game. Last week, he only got 18 carries in five quarters, which blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And I hated it. I hated it. I think that he could absolutely go off and smash this week. Meanwhile, of course, Hotbox Batch is also another sponsor. So I want to give a huge shout out to those guys. Hotbox Batch actually is kind of funny. I don't know if you can see behind me or not, but I made wings tonight and I completely doused them in Hotbox Batch and it was delicious and I pretty much died, but it was delicious. I love Hotbox Batch. So big shout out to them as well. Make sure you guys go buy a couple bottles, of course, from Hotbox Batch. I love Sanders this week. I think he's going to absolutely smash in tonight's game. So yeah, I think that's going to wrap it up for us. Oh, once again, Taylor, please tell them where to find you.
Find me outside at Twitter @_TaylorCornell. You'll see lots of lovely Bengals tweets, lots of FF_intervention retweets, always supporting the brand there, and written work out at dynastyhappyhour.com.
Oh man, I appreciate you guys for listening, of course. You guys can find me at FF_intervention. You guys can also find me at linktr.ee/fantasyintervention as well. Oh, Dynasty Happy Hour, Dynasty Nerds, the pregame HQ. Love it, guys. Anyways, thank you guys for listening once again, and thank you for tuning in to Chasing Points. See you guys later.